Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, cha, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos. Hey, my name is Jed Lee. Welcome to Reading with Your Kids. We're coming to you from the beautiful neighborhood of Reedville, located in the southwest corner of Boston, Massachusetts. We're so very honored and absolutely delighted that you're joining us in our mission to help all families grow closer through reading. We do that by sharing fun, thoughtful, and thought-provoking conversations with fascinating people who just happen to be writing books for kids of all ages. You can join us in our mission by telling all of your family and friends about the show and letting them know that they can hear us on the WREB AM-FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, Amazon Music, CastBox, Player FM, Audible, BoomPlay. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. We have three amazing guests for you today. First up, Dr. Audrey Babakoff is here to celebrate her new board book. It's called Mazel Tovs. Later in the show, Tracy Bloom returns to Reading with Your Kids to celebrate Wonderland's friends, Lisa Loves Bugs. And Kelsey Cook will be joining us to let us know all about her monthly Learning Box service called Learning with Kelsey.
Hey guys, author Ashley Mosley here, and I teamed up with author, educator, and scientist Dr. Michael Wendelspeck, and together we are bringing the wildlife of Belize right into your hands. Kids will meet real animals like jaguars and tapirs in Nacho House Cat and Why Did the Tapir Cross the Street? Both books beautifully illustrated by local student artists. In these books, we will learn the challenges that these animals face in the wild. For teachers, Inspire Adventures offers K-5 toolkits packed with age-appropriate activities that connect literacy, science, and conservation. Our newest book, This Birdie Told Me, landed on the shelves on September 23rd. Visit InspireAdventures.com to get your copy. Let's keep the adventure going.
Join us right now from right near Seattle in the great state of Washington. Our guest is here today to celebrate her delicious, she says, board book. It's called Mazel Tovs. Please welcome to the show Dr. Audrey Babakoff. Dr. Audrey, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you on. You are, in addition to an author, you're an educator, you are a librarian, one of my favorite flavors of human being in the world.
Fantastic. Mine too.
Tell me, just before we get into the book, because I really think libraries are something that are precious and that we need to hang on to and we need to support. And boy, they are first on the chopping block anytime cities are talking about, oh, we need to make cuts and this and that. And you always hear either the public here in Boston, Dr. Aubrey, you're probably going to lose your mind. And Boston public schools, that 40% of the schools do not have a school library. And the 60% that supposedly have a school library, for example, where my beautiful wife taught for 15 or 20 years, her library, in quotes, was actually a cage that a teacher's aide would sit in, and kids would come up to the cage door, and that teacher's aide would hand them a book. None of this browsing through to find a book you might love. It was just whatever that aide happened to be able to reach and hand to the kid. And I guess it was better than nothing, but not a whole lot better.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. You're absolutely right that both public and school, and really even at the college level, your academic libraries are so often the first thing to cut, right? It's the first thing to go. And it's very short-sighted because there is, in addition to the love that we feel as book people, that we know, right, the impact of libraries, there is plenty of research to bear out that kids who have access to a certified school librarian in a real school library do better across the board academically, not even just in reading and writing, but even in math and other subjects. Access to public libraries, it is books and so much more, right? Access to safe spaces, access to technology, to people who can help you figure out how to navigate that job application or that housing application. We really help make the communities a better place for what is frankly, in the grand scheme of things, a piffling investment. Yeah. So everyone support your local libraries.
Yes. You mentioned safe spaces. One of the favorite places I loved performing at every year was the smallest branch of the Boston Public Library. What happened was the library took over an apartment in a housing projects. And it was, I think, a two-bedroom housing, apartment in this housing project. They turned that into a library. I love performing. It was the most difficult place for me to perform because it was a library and there was bookshelves and racks and all these other things in very little open space, but we made it work and kids would sit up on top of the bookcases and windowsills and everything. Always had a great time. And one of the things that became very clear to me was in this housing projects, this was a safe haven for so many kids who were terrified of the quote unquote neighborhood they lived in.
And
school libraries, I started podcasting back in the late 60s in my school library. We didn't call it podcasting back then. We called it, me and my friends called it tape radio. We made little shows and we passed around the cassette tapes and it was a blast, but I know it kept me from getting expelled, being able to finish my work, show my teacher my work was finished. And then my teacher would very enthusiastically tell me, go to the library, go away.
Well, shout out to anyone who is listening who is also interested in podcasting. I think that obviously you have a podcasty audience here. Mm-hmm. Is that a lot of libraries, actually public libraries in particular, have professional grade podcast studios now. So take a look if your library has a maker space. And if you still think of libraries as kind of, kids and story time, we're still all that. Libraries have amazing technology, amazing spaces now. So go check out that makerspace. There is a pretty good chance that there is a professional style podcast studio not far from wherever anyone may be.
I have to check that out. I would miss my lovely Reedville Reading with Your Kid podcast studios, but it would be fun. I've podcasted from a few hotel rooms around the country. So I think doing it in a library would be an awful lot of fun. We've talked about libraries. Let's talk about mazel toes. Is this as aromatic as my toes could be sometime?
Well, we're talking about baby toes, which as you started out saying, delicious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and you can even see it on the cover as the little pudgy baby butt and toes and feet kicking. So
tell me about this book. We're gonna hear some different language in this book.
Absolutely. So there's quite a bit of Yiddish sprinkled through the book. And this really reflects what I grew up hearing with my grandparents. Most of my grandparents didn't speak fluent Yiddish, although their parents often did in most cases. But little bits of the language kind of stuck around. And so I grew up hearing my grandparents and to some extent my parents just kind of peppering some Yiddish in throughout their speech. And Yiddish is so expressive. Like, they're just the sounds of words, you know immediately what they mean, both for better and for worse. They pretty much only cracked it out when they were really quelling over someone, like really being moved or really, emotional or really mad. It's a great language for insulting people. So when I wrote this book, it's very sensory. It's very much about a love poem between a parent and a baby or a caregiver and a baby. I'm just loving every little inch of their body. And so much of that love, that kind of like you just want to squish them, Yiddish captures that so beautifully. So you will hear quite a bit of Yiddish throughout the book. And there's a glossary in the back for the many folks for whom that doesn't, they're not sure.
So I know that there are some people out there who don't have access to a great library or who didn't grow up around a city like Boston or New York City or any other really diverse place. They might not know. They might have heard the word Yiddish, but they might not know where that comes from.
That is such a great point. I've actually never had anyone ask me that. So Yiddish is kind of a Jewish-Germanic hybrid. Jews have been in exile in the diaspora all over the world for millennia, as they assimilated into various societies, kind of picked up bits of the language that was being spoken around them and combined it with their own Hebrew, and so that resulted in Yiddish for one, which is kind of German and Hebrew sort of mushed up. But there's also Judeo-Spanish, which is called Ladino, Judeo-Arabic, and there's all kinds of sort of crypto-Jewish languages from all over the world.
Yeah. And I grew up in a little town outside of Boston, Massachusetts. It's actually, I lived closer to downtown Boston when I lived in the town of Brookline than I do now that I live in the city of Boston. But it was a predominantly Jewish town. We grew up in what the Boston Globe called the Irish ghetto. But of course we heard lots of Yiddish phrases and were very, and used them. Probably couldn't use them in this podcast, but we used a lot of those words.
Yeah. And, you know, people actually probably know a lot more Yiddish than they realize, because a lot of it has just often via comedy, via movies, right, has kind of made its way into the vernacular. So, you know, if you've ever called someone a schmuck, right, like, that's Yiddish. So you actually probably something that I will sometimes run into with Mazel Tov when I'm showing it to someone who says, oh, you know, I don't know a lot of Jewish people, or I didn't grow up hearing a lot of Yiddish. They'll start to read and they'll say, oh, I do know that word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So tell me, what are a couple of words that we're going to read in Mazel Tov?
Okay. I'll give you my favorite, which is one that people may not have heard, and that's pulkies.
Okay. So, I did not hear that.
Yeah. Pulkies. P-U-L-K-E-S.
Okay.
Is you know, the transliteration, pulkis or pulkies. And it's a word for a chubby baby thigh that's so squishy you could eat it. And that's actually baked in, that meaning, because it translates literally, I think, to chicken leg. And it's like, you know, that little chubby squishy squish on a baby that you could just bite because it's so delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So pulkies for cute baby thighs.
Yeah. I love it. So, and again, I know somebody's going to be out there saying, okay, this sounds cool. Jewish family, you definitely get Mazel Tovs, but we're not Jewish. So why would my kid want to learn any Yiddish?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, to be honest, your kid is probably not directly learning a lot of words. This is a board book. Its target range is babies, really. It is a book about babies. So we're looking at kind of your 0 to 3 range. Not that an older sibling or something can't enjoy reading it with a kid. But at this age, what it's really about is love. What it's really about is bonding. And anyone is going to get that from this book. That, you know, it really takes you from the top of the baby's head to the tips of their toes and gives you different ways to love and boop and kiss and squeeze. And when you do those physical movements along with the book, you are building baby's brain, you are building that really crucial early development, that feeling of safety with a caregiver, with an adult. You're getting all those kind of love hormones going, both in the baby and in you, those bonding, right, those bonding neurotransmitters. So that is absolutely true, and your baby will get that regardless of what words you are saying. But then I'll also add that it's really wonderful for all children to have access to diverse books.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Radine Sims Bishop came up with this very, very now widespread way of thinking about diverse books, where she talks about books as windows, mirrors, and sliding glass doors. And often we're looking for mirrors in books, right? Mm-hmm. We want to see ourselves. We want our kids to see themselves represented. That's so important. And of course, Jewish families get that from Mazel Tovs and my other books. But we also need windows. We need opportunities to look out at and even to step out through that sliding glass door into someone else's shoes. Or no one's wearing shoes and Mazel Tovs, so I suppose into their diapers and into their onesies, and really, you know, see ourselves in the experiences of other people, to develop empathy, to learn about the world, to see that there are all kinds of people in the world, and that they're all people.
Mm-hmm.
We're all people. And it just develops empathy, it develops cultural competency, and it's never too early to start exposing your kids to a wide, wide diversity of people and stories.
Yeah. Being an old white guy, I guess I read lots of mirrors growing up, but I was always fascinated at those books that were windows and gave me a chance to look into another culture, another way of living, another person's experience. And that is something we're a multicultural or bicultural family here. My beautiful wife is from Puerto Rico, so we loved books that talked about Latin America and Puerto Rico. But we also loved books that introduced our kids to cultures all over the world. I thought it was so very important. And that actually grew into us hosting international students in our home. And it's so beneficial because my kids, no matter who they meet, it's very easy for them to relate and just develop friendships. There's none of that, you're really different than me and we probably can't get along. It's very quickly they're able to what's up? What do you guys eat? We eat this. And
mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's such a joy of kids in general too, right? Is that so often that they approach situations without the sort of the preconceived notions or baggage that we might have as adults. It's a good reminder for all of us to learn a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a book, if you're an adult and you didn't have that experience where you loved books that were windows, this is a great way to introduce yourself to some cultures. If you're not, you know, if you're like, yeah, I don't know many Jewish people, it's like, well, Mazel Tovs is a great place to kind of start. You and your baby get familiar with some of those words that, like Dr. Audrey said before, you probably have already heard and might use in your daily life.
Absolutely, absolutely. And something about story, even more so, is that story is really a gift. You know, it doesn't have to feel like eating your vegetables. It's not like, and now we're going to sit down and learn about blah, 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 right? It's just stories and people, mm-hmm. and it's joyful. Mm-hmm. So we're expanding the world for our children, and as you say, for ourselves, you know, without even necessarily intending to, but just because we fall into a good story.
Dr. Audrey, I just finished listening. Most of my reading is done through audiobooks these days, and mm-hmm. I love them because it quadruples the time that I can spend with books. You know, just quadruples the places I can experience books. I just finished listening to Mel Brooks' autobiography, and I am thinking that would be the perfect voice. You know, I know that if I was reading Mazel Tovs, I'd be hearing it. I'd be reading it in Mel Brooks' voice.
Okay, Mel Brooks, if you're listening, please come do the audiobook version of Mazel Tovs. That would be amazing. I assume he does his own narration. I've got to listen to that.
He does do his own narration, and it's incredible. And one of the things I love about listening to an author read their book, especially reading an autobiography, is that they're reading things that they forgot they wrote, and they make themselves laugh very often. And Mel is laughing through this whole book. And a friend of mine did the same thing. I was listening to the book, his book that he read, and you could almost hear in his voice like, oh, did I write that? That's pretty good. I'm really glad.
You know, I think, there is nothing more Jewish than humor, you know, that is kind of culturally, I think, one of the main ways that we have kind of continued to exist as a people, right? Have kind of made it through, you know, centuries, millennia of kind of trials and tribulations and struggle is like, well, you know, if you can laugh, you're probably not dead. Mm-hmm. So that's for me, that's really important as I write. All of my books have, I'm finding like some level of humor or wordplay. My first picture book before Mazel Tov, The Shlemiel Kids Save the Moon, is based on some old Jewish folk tales about a town called Chelm, where everyone is an idiot, basically. And it's like they kind of goof their way into the solution to the problems that often they've created for themselves. Mm-hmm. I put a twist on it by adding two very, very smart kids into the town who have to kind of work behind the scenes to sort of, you know, steer the very clueless grownups in the right direction. But again, you know, just really coming from a place of humor and laughter. And I think there's kind of a, obviously humor exists in every culture, but there's kind of like a uniquely Jewish type of humor, mm-hmm. at least kind of Ashkenazi Jewish sort of take. Just sort of a little twist that you'll often find in, you know, things like, you know, creations by Mel Brooks. And it's really a joy for me to get to experience that, to get to share it with my kids. I hope it's a joy for other people to get to share those like little kind of funny moments with their kids, too.
I do, too. You know, Dr. Arter, you just brought up something that I've been kind of playing with. You know, I think a lot of at least people in my generation, I'm almost 100. But, you know, I think a lot of the humor that we experience was based on that Jewish humor, the humor that kind of grew up in the Catskills and then went on to TV. And a lot of those very early comedians that we think about on TV all came from that Catskills kind of culture. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it is kind of self-deprecating humor. And, you know, there's this one joke that I had that it's doing in my educational magic shows. It got laughs for decades. And I would show a bag. And, you know, you're a magician. You got to show that there's nothing in the bag. And I would open up the bag and turn it inside out and say, look, this bag is empty, just like my head. And it would get laughs, like I said, for decades. But in the last decade or so, I would do the same thing. And I turn it inside out. And I say, this bag is empty, just like my head. And maybe two teachers in the back of the room would giggle. But the kids would kind of be silent and they said, oh, your head is not empty. You have a brain. And it's really sweet, but it's like, that's not what I was looking for, kid. Just laugh. I think it's just, you know, I hope we never lose that. I think because I think it's important for us to be able to laugh at ourselves.
Yeah.
So what other, you mentioned your other book. How many books do you have out there in the world, Dr. Audrey?
So for kids, there are the two right now. So Mazel Tov, the word book, and The Shlemiel Kids Save the Moon is a picture book. But there are more on the way.
Awesome. Where can we go to find out more about Mazel Tov and more about you?
Oh, fantastic. So you can, if you can figure out how to spell Barbakoff, you can use that to find me pretty much anywhere because there aren't a whole lot of us. So I'm Barbakoff Books on Instagram, barbakoffbooks.com for my website. So you can sort of find me out and about there. And the books are widely available wherever books are sold. Mazel Tov is actually in the pre-order phase right now. It will be released on October 28th. I guess maybe by the time you air this, it'll be out, but it comes out October 28th. But you can pre-order it anywhere you get your books.
Wonderful. And let's just give another plug to the library. You know, I was sitting down talking to somebody the other day and they were saying, you know, yeah, you go to the library, you get some books, but you can also check out movies and DVDs and music. And you can get passes to the zoo and passes to the museums and just remind us of all the great things we can find at our local public library.
Absolutely. And actually, that, of course, would be another wonderful way to get the book is that people don't realize sometimes that you can ask your library to buy books on your behalf. So if you don't want to buy the book, you can go to your library and ask them to buy it for you. And they probably will because you've asked for it. And then you can read it that way. But absolutely, you know, a lot of libraries now have what we're calling a library of things. And you can check out, I mean, even at my local library, you can check out a telescope. You can check out a ukulele. You can check out an educational kit aimed at like various ages with kind of like STEM activities in them. That's science, technology, engineering, math. or art activities. And of course, that doesn't even take into account all of the programs that are happening, again, almost always, you know, free of charge. Again, hey, magicians, right? And, you know, animals and science and art and all kinds of wonderful things. So yep. go and ask. Go find what your library has.
We've had a great time speaking to the author of Mazel Toes. It's a new board book, the delicious new board book from our guest, Dr. Audrey Barbakoff. Hey, Dr. Audrey, thank you so much for being on Reading With Your Kids.
Thanks for having me. It's been a joy.
Want to let you know that this episode of Reading With Your Kids is brought to you by Once Upon a Dance. onceuponadance.com. What are you going to find there? Well, books that move you, literally. Once Upon a Dance turns story time into a dance-along adventure. Build confidence, create connection, and enjoy screen-free fun. With over 60 awards and 3,000 five-star reviews, these interactive tales inspire kids to jump, twirl, and imagine. For your next adventure, check out onceuponadance.com. They're available wherever books are sold online. You're not going to regret visiting onceuponadance.com. They are so much fun. You and your kids are going to love them. Join us right now from the great state of Ohio. Our guest is returning to Reading With Your Kids to celebrate her new middle grade novel. It's called Wonderland's Friends, Lisa Loves Bugs. Please welcome to the show, Tracy Bloom. Tracy, yeah. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you back on. Tracy, you folks are listening can't see. Tracy has this great background where there's a little character, a little girl with a telescope looking out into the universe. And is that from one of your books?
It is. This is part of the Wonderland's Friends. This is part of book two that should be published in the fall of 26. And this one is called Luna Loves Space. So it awesome. Is part of the series.
So Lisa Loves Bugs is the first in a series. Do we know how many books are going to be in the series?
I believe four.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So who's Lisa and why does she love bugs so much?
Lisa is a 9-year-old girl who happens to stumble upon a magical magnifying glass. And it's kind of like an AI, but, you know, you point it at something and it shows you everything that it's made of and where it comes from and all these facts about it. And so she loves bugs because she, you know, she's grown up in a family that loves plants and gardens, but she discovers a problem in the garden with this magnifying glass. So
She
does her thing.
All right. You know, the crazy thing is if this book were written 5 years ago, people would sit there going, ridiculous, a magnifying glass, it can tell you everything. But right, I have an app on my phone. If I point it at a plant, it tells me if it's healthy, what the plant is, where it grows, and all that other kind of crazy stuff.
I know, isn't that nuts how technology is just growing by leaps and bounds?
Yes.
It seems, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, crazy. So what inspired, was it a crazy app on your phone that inspired the story or a dream?
Well, yeah, it was kind of a mix of both. So it was a dream at first. I dreamt of a little girl who had a magic pair of glasses, actually, in my dream. She had magic glasses, and it allowed her to see how things worked. And so I also am a big gardener, and I was out in my yard, and I was looking at milkweed. And I was like, huh, what are all these bugs doing on here? And I started kind of rabbit holing into what the bugs were doing there and why they were there and the ecosystem of my garden. And that's kind of what inspired it.
Yeah. I have become a big fan of milkweed. I didn't think they were all that attractive when they started growing in our garden. But then I realized what a valuable role they played. And I thought, oh, we gotta take care of these guys.
Yeah.
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 You've been writing, you tell me before we started that you're up to your 43rd, 44th book?
It is the 43rd book that I just published, and I am always working on a couple new books at a time, so I anticipate that kind of changing up to 44, 46 by next year, maybe.
That's fantastic. We've had a lot of authors on, and I asked them their process, like, what do you do at the start? Do ideas just come to you? Do you sit down and ask a question? What if X, Y, or Z happen? How does inspiration come for you?
Well, it's usually a little bit different for each book. I actually wrote this book as a picture book at first. And I just sat down and I wrote it out as, a little girl discovering glasses, and it was all of 1,000 words. But when it was pitched to Paw Prints, the publisher, they wanted it to be a longer book, and they really wanted to get to know the world and the characters and expand upon what it could be. So actually, I started plotting. So that's a new thing for me. I normally just sit down and free write. And with this series, I've done a lot of plotting and planning my chapters and planning out what's going to happen in the whole book before actually even starting it. Yeah.
So that was a different experience for you. Was it difficult to adapt?
No, it was actually really, really nice. And I feel like I'm going to be doing a lot more of it for future books. And it's really neat working with editors, and it's neat working with people who have, been doing that work for a long time. And so they kind of can offer input on, well, maybe you could do this with your story arc, or maybe you could expand upon this or leave these breadcrumbs. So it's kind of interesting working with a publisher, and I really enjoy it so
Yeah.
far.
You told us that Lisa finds a problem in the garden. Without giving away any spoilers, can you give us a hint of what the problem might be?
Well, it has to do with disappearing fireflies.
Disappearing fireflies. All right, you have my interest here, and I love it. Tell me, have you decided that you prefer writing middle grade novels over picture books, or are you going to bounce back and forth?
I'm gonna bounce back and forth. I love picture books, and I have so many ideas for a whole slew of them, but I also really enjoy writing middle grade, and I think probably those two areas I'll bounce back and forth between, but I'm also kind of trying my hand at screenplay writing, so trying that and just seeing if I can maybe get into that world. I'm not sure, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's when you get into that world.
Yes. When?
Yes,
I need to start shaping my language.
yeah. It sounds like there's a whole lot of creativity happening in the Bloom home. You were sharing beforehand that your husband forges wonderful things out of metal. And do you ever sit down with your husband and think, "Hey, can you forge a Lisa statue or a bug statue or anything like that?" Or does he come to you and say, "Hey, I created this thing. Can you create a story behind it?"
You know what? We were, he's trying to do more like home and garden type of stuff. And so he was actually toying around with making like forged book stands
Oh.
and forged garden tools and forged things that could maybe accompany a book that, is about gardens. So we've talked about it, and he's always working on something.
Yeah, that's so cool. I'm checking out your website. You have so much going on. One of the things you do is you help mentor other authors in as they're creating their books.
I do. I started doing that a couple years ago, just because I had so many people reaching out through email and asking, hey, I started writing a book, but I don't know where to go. Or, hey, do you know how to find an illustrator? Or, hey, how did you print your books? Or who do you print with? And I thought, I could probably offer a mentorship. And I can't do so many at a time just because I work a full-time job in IT. So, between the, my own work and a day job, I can usually only mentor like 2 to 3 authors a year. But, yeah, basically from their concept all the way to publishing, and then helping to pair them with an artist and helping them to self-publish their own books.
Yeah. How does that feel, being a mentor and helping people make their dreams come true?
It's really fulfilling. And I've just been doing it for so long with my own work. It feels good to pass it on.
Yeah.
And I always hope that people, when they learn a trade, they offer that to other people who are just getting started too, you know, just so you're not hoarding all the knowledge. You know, it takes a lot to self-publish a book. And then, you know, if you find somebody that's open to being a coach, it means the world. So, and that can be in anything.
Yeah. It is important when we reach certain levels to be able to turn around and reach your hand out so you can help somebody up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also saw that you also have a podcast.
I have a podcast. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
It's part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. So I'm one of, I think, 40 hosts under their umbrella. And my podcast features anyone who inspires kids. So I've had, you know, scientists, ballerinas, Olympic athletes, singers, you name it. So it's a lot of fun.
Excellent. Yeah. I just had an opportunity at a celebration to dance with a professional ballerina. I've known her since she was in high school, and I've watched her. She's danced all over the world, and we're at this party, and I said, yo, I'm going to dance with you. Come on, let's go.
Yes, that is so great. And bar as a taught or as a, you know, exercise bar classes. I just tried that for the first time not too long ago, and kudos to any ballerina, because dancing and bar and all of that is so hard. So,
well, it is. You know, my daughter danced. We snuck her in and we fibbed a little bit when she was 2 and a half, and we said she was 4 to get her into a dance class. And she danced. She's still dancing now at 29. But she did it all. She did the point. The point shoes. The ballerina that I danced with the other day, I just asked her, I said, how quickly do you go through a pair of point shoes? And she goes, oh, every week. It's just crazy. And I'm like, and it kills your toes and all that other kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's a whole nother level.
Absolutely. Well, we should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Wonderland's friends, Lisa Loves Bugs, and find out more about you and all the great things that you're up to.
Yes, so I have a website. It is called theblom.com. So it's, my last name is Bloom, but it's spelled with one O, so it looks like theblom.com.
Awesome. We've had a great time speaking to the author of Wonderland's Friends, Lisa Loves Bugs. Our guest has been Tracy Bloom. Tracy, thanks for being back on Reading with Your Kids.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let you know that this episode of Reading with Your Kids is also brought to you by We're Going on a Space Adventure, written by Marie Nichols. This is a Reading with Your Kids certified great read. Blasting off and speeding through space, Graham cheers to the moon and beyond. But Bracken quickly learns that Graham has a fear of flying and that he must manage control of the spaceship. On the moon, they narrowly escape a hideous monster as a crater explodes, and on Mars, they need to outrun Martian creatures or risk becoming their dinner. Hoping to find a friendlier planet, they decide to try Jupiter. Then clank, 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 something is attacking the spaceship. You and your kids are going to love this book. It's fun. It's exciting. It celebrates intergenerational friendships, and we love those. We're Going on a Space Adventure by Marie Nichols. It is a Reading with Your Kids certified great read. Join us from the very beautiful and very hot state of Arizona. Our guest is here today to celebrate her monthly Learning Box service. Please welcome to the show, Kelsey Cook. Kelsey, how are you?
I'm so good. I'm so excited to be here.
And I forgot to mention the name of your service is Learning with Kelsey.
Yes. Use my own name, right?
There you go. There you go. Well, you know, they say that people buy from a person that they know, that they like, and that they trust. And if people know you and trust you, I guess the boxes are going to be very successful.
I hope so.
Yeah. So tell us first a little bit about you. You told me you were a teacher.
Yes. So I taught third grade, I taught kindergarten, and then I taught preschool. And after I had my first baby, I decided to stay home, but I could not stay away from teaching. So I opened a preschool out of my house and just kind of taught neighborhood kids 2 days a week. It was like the best of both worlds. And since then, I've had three more babies. So I have four kids, and they're 9, 7, 4, and 1. So we're busy here.
Okay. Now, you're not having the kids because it's like, well, if I have more kids, I can't go back to the classroom.
Yeah, I'm like, please don't make me go. No, no, I like having them.
So, this idea that you have of creating these monthly learning boxes for families, you tell me that you came up with this idea around 2020?
Yeah. So when COVID happened, I had to close my preschool, you know, like everyone was doing. And I was feeling bad that my preschoolers were missing out on like my favorite part of school, the end of the year. So I put together packets with the activities that we would do in preschool, and I would leave them on the porch for the moms to pick up. And the moms started picking them up and posting them on their Instagram. And other moms saw them and were like, okay, we have all these kids at home that we don't know what to do with. Can we get one of those packets? And so I was like, okay, I can make more. And as I was doing this, it's gone on for probably a month and a half. I thought, okay, I think there's really something here, more than just COVID, more than just preschool, that parents don't really feel prepared to do what we need to do to get our kids to kindergarten. It feels so overwhelming because those first 5 years, you're in charge. You know, you don't have anyone else that you're kind of relying on. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to take these packets and I'm going to make them into a box. And it's going to be activities that moms can do at home or dads with their kids, easy. Everything's included. They pull them out. They're right at their developmental age. And yeah, since then we've grown. We've moved 2 warehouses. I have 20 employees and we sent 14,000 boxes last month. So.
Wow. That's, you know, I think there is a real need for this. My kids are now 28 and 32, so I don't need it right now. But I think there is a need. We've had many authors on the show who are also teachers, and they're telling us that school has really changed, especially when you're talking about preschool and kindergarten. It's, mm-hmm. And, you know, there's this big, big push to make kindergarten first grade, and it's becoming very regimented. And I remember back when my kids were young, and I know that families need daycare, and I know that there's a need for preschool, but we were blessed. My mom was still with us, and so my mom took care of my kids. When I was out on the road touring, my mom would step in, and people in the neighborhood would tell us, oh, Mrs. So-and-so has a great preschool, and everybody just loves her. And we said, okay, great. But we have Nana here, and mm-hmm. Grammy can take care. And, you know, between my beautiful wife, me, and my mom, we gave our kids the best experience ever. And I've always said that parents are a kid's first and most important teacher.
Yeah, you're speaking my language. That's one of my favorite things to say. I'm like, parents, you are your kid's best teacher. And I'm sure your wife knows as an educator, as you move through the school system, as they're in school, having a parent that is involved in their child's education is priceless.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Involved in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In a positive way. One of the things my beautiful wife, not so much her, but her colleagues experienced when parents came in, they weren't coming in with a, hey, Teacher Kelsey, I want to work with you to make the best experience for my kid. They were coming in with, hey, Kelsey, who are you talking to? And there was this mm-hmm. battle going on before they even started talking.
Yeah. I feel like it's so important for parents to realize that they're going to be the partner with their teacher. And so the more that the time you spend with your kids when they're little and you're kind of learning what their education says, how they learn, and really creating that relationship, honestly, the most important thing to me with these boxes is that you're building a great core relationship with your child, that's just going to carry on throughout their education. So if you feel like you can have a great relationship with your child, you understand them, you know where they're at, then when you meet the teacher, you're like, okay, let's be on the same team. Let's work together and help my child be the most successful that they can be.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are we going to find when I order a box, maybe if I'm blessed with grandkids at some point and I order a box, what am I going to get in that first box?
So there's 20 activities, and I have 5 different boxes that are based on the child's age, because, you know, the difference in a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old is so big, but there's so many toys, you know, that are geared to 2 to 4-year-olds. And I'm like, well, there's a big developmental difference there. So like for our toddler box, which is the 2-year-old box, they're working on fine motor skills, colors, they're working on gross motor, they're working on play. They're doing all these things through play, but they're getting to experience that little bit of education. And so every month is themed. I am a teacher. I love a good theme. I love a holiday. So like our September box is all fall themed. And so they have like an apple picking activity with pom-poms. And then they're using Play-Doh to create little apples to put on their tree. Just so many different fun things that they get to experience.
Very, very cool. I love that. And you were saying that the box for the 2-year-old is different than the 4-year-old. What would a 4-year-old be working on?
So the 4-year-olds are working on letter recognition. We're starting with their tracing. And then they're starting counting, early number skills. And the boxes build on each other. So ideally, you start with the toddler box, and the next year you do preschool, and then the kinder prep, and then your child is ready, and you've spent all of this time doing these fun activities without having to use your mental, you know, capacity that's already spent to come up with the activities.
Sure, sure. You know, I think would be fantastic, even if your kid is in the very best preschool in the world and they're getting support, but it's like, well, it's the end of the day. I want to have some fun with my kids too.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like the way I say it is they're 10 to 15 minute activities, and it's 10 to 15 minutes of undivided attention that you're giving your child, which can help with so many different things, but especially behavior. You know, if your child knows they're going to get 10 minutes of uninterrupted one-on-one time with you, they're not trying to pull at you and get your attention in other ways because they know it's coming or they know they've done it. And so it's a great way for that too.
You're the expert here, but I always say that, you know, one of the reasons I love parents reading with their kids is because you're making a statement. The most important person in that kid's world is saying, you're my priority right now. I'm putting everything down to sit down and spend this quality time reading this book with you. Am I out of my tree? Are parents really the most important people in kids' lives?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I feel like you're the center of their universe, you know, and it doesn't last for their whole lives. So you really to take advantage of it when you can, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I've said is that, you know, that I know that my relationship with my adult kids was built on a foundation of reading and doing things with them. And that just so when my daughter didn't go through that, I'm 14 and I hate my father and I don't want to talk to my mother stage. We had, you know, just lots and lots of fun. I made a joke the other day with some of her friends. When she was 15 and 16 years old, she would choose to come out on tour with me, just me and her riding around the country for 3 weeks at a time in a van with, you know, me doing my shows and her supporting me, helping me set up. And I can't think of many other 16-year-olds who would choose.
No. I love that. And, you know, and that's just like a testament to what the quality time you spend with your kids can do for them later on in life. You know, like you're setting this foundation in these early years that's going to continue into adulthood.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So where did your love for teaching come from? Did you know from the time you were a little girl you wanted to be a teacher?
Yeah, so I'm the oldest in my family, and so I have a lot of those typical oldest child qualities where I was always forcing my little siblings to, you know, play school with me, boss them around. I always said, like, I love being a teacher. I got to boss people around, and it was okay, you know? So I just always loved working with kids, and so that was just always my goal. I always wanted to be a teacher, and then once I got to college and started actually getting to be in a classroom and be with students, I just fell in love with it.
Yeah. I am curious about how you made the transition, because being a teacher is very different from being a CEO of a company of 20 people.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a big transition. It's been hard for me too, because, you know, I always say, like, I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't consider myself that. But then at the end of the day, I did create this business. So I kind of have fallen into it. But it's kind of just been a learning experience. And I think there's so many qualities that teachers have that you don't realize transfer so well into business. Like, teachers are incredible problem solvers. You know, they're very good at thinking on their toes. They're very good at, if there's something that I don't know, I just assume I can figure it out. I can learn it. So I think that has been like the best thing to help me, is I'm like, okay, well, I don't know how to do a website. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to Google it. I'm going to read. I'm going to ask someone that knows better than me. And so that's kind of how I built this business.
Any thought of expanding and maybe doing a kindergarten box, a first, second grade box?
I don't see. I get asked that a lot by moms that, you know, end up using my box and say, okay, wait, now I want to homeschool. How can I keep doing that? And so I think eventually the next thing I would love to do is a reading program, because I'm very passionate about teaching kids to read and the best way to do that. So I feel like right now I'm going to stay in my zone of the 2 to 5 year olds, where I know I'm really good at it. I know what I'm doing there, and not expand too far yet.
And what's the cost for your box?
So they're $48 a month.
That's pretty reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know in a lot of places, preschool can be so expensive, you know? And so this is such a great alternative to do at home or just extra, like you said.
Yeah. We've had a great time. Where can we go to find out more about your boxes?
Oh, yes. So you can find me. I'm on Instagram at Learning with Kelsey, and then also learningwithkelsey.com.
Awesome. We've had a great time speaking to the CEO, the driving force, the founder of Learning with Kelsey. Our guest has been Kelsey Cook. Hey, Kelsey, thanks so much for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Reading with Your Kids. If it made you smile, gave you something to think about, please consider sharing a link to the show with the people you love. Leave a 5-star review, and of course, be sure to subscribe to the show so you don't miss a moment. We'd love for you to connect with us on social media, facebook.com/readingwithyourkids, @readingwithyourkids, on Instagram, and @JedlyMagic on X, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/readingwithyourkids. And we'd love for you to visit our website, readingwithyourkids.com. You can visit our Certified Great Read Wall of Fame. You can contact us using the contact button. And if you're the author of a fantastic children's book, you can find out how you can be a guest. Being a guest, it's fun, it's easy, and it gives you the chance to tell thousands of Kidlit fans all over the world about your fantastic children's book. Want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our guest, Dr. Audrey Babakoff. Please be sure to check out Mazu Toes. Tracy Bloom. Please be sure to check out Wonderland's Friends. Lisa Loves Bugs. And, of course, Kelsey Cook. Please be sure to check out Learning with Kelsey. I want to thank my amazing team, Fatima Khan, Chris Doherty. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. You are amazing. You work so hard to take care of your family, to be a good neighbor, to be a great parent. And you're succeeding. You're doing more than succeeding. You're crushing it. You're making your kids smile. You're making the world a kinder, smarter, more empathetic place. And you do that every time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for the next episode of Reading with Your Kids.
Hey, here we go, love. Let's sing it loud. Get ready for the fun and never feel down. Step into the light, let your colors show. Each and every one of you, let your spirit. Little heartbeat, you were born to fly. You are amazing.
When the clouds are gray and you feel all alone, just look inside yourself, there's a heart of gold. With every single smile you can light the way. You have the power, let your joy stay. We'll make our name.